All right.
And we're back.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for coming back. Right, the next session, we're just going to kind of take a quick snapshot of where we are at. And
where
then
are we? I was wondering.
Where are we at, yeah. We've kind of gone through the introductory section now, and we're going to start talking about really getting into the code and about the process of creating a Windows Phone app. So this is where we're at. Got two sessions that actually work together, designing Windows Phone apps and building Windows Phone apps. Those two sit together, and this is our snapshot. We're going to show this agenda before every session, just so you get a clear idea of where we are at. We're going to try and pick the pace up. We've gone a little bit behind schedule already, so...
You know how during the break, we compiled Andy in the cloud,
yeah.
And so he'll be able to pick up the pace
so,
now.
Yeah,
so it's
that's
be
right.
Great.
So
it's all good.
So the normal slow start is kind of... We're
exactly.
Done with that. Yeah. Okay, so let's go.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah, so that's where we're at on the current agenda, and then we're going to... day two, that's all the stuff we're going to be talking about tomorrow. All right. So this one is about, in this and the next module, we're going to go through all the essentials. So the idea is at the end of this, you will have seen pretty much all the essential techniques you need to build an app. So it's kind of the basic knowledge. Now, for those of you who are familiar to building Windows Phone apps, a lot of this will be revision, but you'll be seeing all of the new Windows Phone 8 tools, and a lot of stuff some good stuff has changed to make your job easier and easier to work in Visual Studio.
Easy is good.
Yeah, that's right. So in this one, we're going to talk about the whole design language. Design is very important. We need to start by thinking about what it is we're trying to do. Then I'm just going to introduce you to XAML, for those of you who are not familiar with that. And then how we work with Windows Phone styles and themes, how we can create design time data to help with that creation exercise. Data binding is an important technology you have to understand. And then we'll look at how you create templates to show stuff in lists and the long list selector. So let's talk about Windows Phone design first. So the whole style, the phone that you see in your hand when you get a Windows Phone device, is the product of a lot of effort. A lot of people have worked very hard to come up with the lovely smooth animations and the good user experience. Industry commentators comment on how nice the Windows Phone experience is. So your job as a developer is to create applications that express this style and fit in and feel like they fit on a Windows Phone. So this is really what this session is kind of all about, is creating apps that work well and become good citizens on the phone. And there's a lot of, this has changed over the years, but there's some basic design principles you need to embrace. So it's about being about pride in craftsmanship. This is a principle that reminds designers and developers you need to take pride in what you create. Mediocre isn't good enough. So we've got great tools, and great visual content is part of the Windows Phone
story.
So
from now on, no more mediocre apps.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stop it.
It's about ensuring balance and symmetry, and where possible, aligning to a grid. So I'm going to talk about the alignment grid in this session.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, of course, about building an intuitive interface where the user is free to explore without fear of something going wrong. So you should always create something that gives the user confidence and they don't feel frightened of interacting with.
Don't want to intimidate users with your apps.
That's always a bad idea.
Always.
And about being fast and fluid, this idea of delight with motion. So, you know, with the continual increase in... We have a great graphics processor on Windows Phone, and animations, subtle animations, not in-your-face ones, are all part of the story. So it's possible to bring a new dimension to applications in the form of animations. So we have a number of predefined animations that are pretty easy to integrate. I'll show you how you can do that. So I'll show that how you can do that one. And it's about being digitally authentic, about content before Chrome. So this is about focusing on the core objective of the application. And too often this is not considered. So, you know, you can actually end up with an application that appears like an uncomfortable collection of disparate parts that don't seem to fit very well together.
I remember when we used to worry about Chrome a long time ago.
Yeah.
I think IBM with the OS2, they had this CUA 92. Anyway, it almost sounds like SQL 92, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We'll just move right along.
I think we should.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so the key message here is when you design your application, focus on what it is you're giving the user, what it is they want to achieve with your application. Always ask that question, why has the user opened my application? Yeah, authentically digital. This is about skeuomorphism. Don't do skeuomorphism. Don't try and create an app that looks like something from the real world. I mean, obviously, there's a kind of contradiction. In you need to clearly clearly communicate what the app does, but use, you know, make use of the platform. Make it, this is running on a digital device. Make it look like a digital information source, and make it look good, and just make applications look like they belong on the phone, not trying to copy something in the real world.
Rather than having the whole background look like it's some kind of
bookcase,
wood
or
leather or something, right. Yeah. Where you're in the real world, because we're not there.
That's not the phone style.
Right.
That's not the phone style.
So other people do that. We don't do that.
Yeah. And it's about working together. So giving a consistent user experience which benefits the end user, application developer, device manufacturers, and of course everybody. So it's about, with the phone and with Windows 8, we've got a consistency as well. Let's mention that as well.
Yeah.
This design approach totally is throughout Windows 8 as well. So it's about celebrating that, and great opportunities for you as application developers. All right. So that's the summary of those design principles. Keep those in mind when you're creating your Windows Phone applications. The result is what you see here, is the Windows Phone style. So great use of bold block colors, a clear uncluttered display, and clear communication, that's the important thing, clear communication of the information the user needs. So with that, let's talk about the Windows Phone 8 SDK and how the Windows Phone design style is manifested in what the tools that we give you. So in the we have our default fonts, which are nice, clear. Typography is a very important part of this.
Yes.
So we have really nice default fonts. You can use other ones as well, but the default fonts are great. And you see that user experience design guidelines for Windows Phone, that link there. I really recommend you go and take some time to read that, which is it's going on, bakes in these ideas about what things I've just been talking about. And because great Windows Phone design is a combination of other aspects, such as the spacing between UI items, the page layout, use of panoramas and pivots, the menuing system. It's, mm-hmm. it's a lot of different ingredients that together make a great application. Right, so that was some principles and background. Now let's actually get ahead and do it.
Let's do it.
But actually,
principles
still, still not writing any code, because I strongly recommend that you start with a paper exercise.
I totally agree.
Yeah. And this is, again, about asking yourself, what is the user? Why is the user opening my app? What is it they want to do?
Right.
And you have to remember with phone apps as well, they are short attention span applications. And you run an app because you've got a few minutes. You want a specific piece of information. So you'll run the app, and you're expecting to get quick answers. So you don't want to take your user through a great big, long, complicated, multi-page wizard kind of thing. You need to be focused, laser-focused on getting the information.
Maybe,
and that can be helped.
Maybe focused on that scenario.
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
As you're doing your scenario-focused engineering, trying to make things a little spicier, right?
Yeah.
And writing it out.
Yeah, that's right.
Page by page. Pulling out the scissors.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the paper.
Totally, yeah.
Pencil.
Yeah. So on the slide, we've got the design for the Contoso cookbook application, which I'm going to use as mine.
Not those guys again.
Them again, yes. They've got their fingers in every business
yes,
ever
they
devised.
Do.
Yeah. And this is what we're going to build. So this is the paper exercise. So we've got our main page, which is going to be a list of regional cooking styles. So you're going to have Indian, Chinese, Italian stuff on there. And then you select something from the list, and we're going to go over to what is a pivot page. So we're going to pivot page. So first of all, we're going to have a summary landing page for that mm-hmm. particular regional area. And then you'll be able to scroll across and see a list of recipes for that particular region. And then you select on there, and then we're going to go to the recipe details. So this is this paper exercise we do up front to help us design what it is we're going to build. And also, design your app navigation early. So that's really crucially important as well. How your user is going to navigate from your landing page through different experiences, and try and keep that sequence as short as possible. Keep it focused on the content. So this is my paper exercise for figuring out what the navigation will be. Some of them begin as simple, where you just go from a menu to an about page, and the only way you can go from there is back again. Others might have a sequence of steps that mm-hmm. the user can go into. And then, so now we know what it is we're going to build, so let's actually start doing it. Now, the tools are, we need to start separating the graphical design aspects from the code logic behind it. And this separation of the UI from the actual logic leads to well-structured applications. And as we'll learn when we start talking about creating cross-platform apps for Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8, which we'll get to tomorrow, is a crucial ingredient as well that helps you to share code between the apps for the same platform. So it's a good thing from a good object-oriented design point of view, but the good thing about this is that the tools that you get in the Windows Phone 8 SDK include two main kind of toolboxes, which is Visual Studio and Expression Blend. So let's have a look at Expression Blend. So this is the tool that is intended for the UX designer to use. So this is where they're going to feel most comfortable. It gives them a control area that speaks to them in their language. And this is what the designer works on without having to worry too much about on the underlying code. So this is their design surface. But the key thing is that not only that, we've got Visual Studio. And this is working on exactly the same code files, the same project files, but this is the one that the whole UI is more focused towards the needs of the code developer. There is a lot of design stuff in Visual Studio, and in fact, what you'll find with Windows Phone 8 compared to what we had before, a lot of the stuff that you had to switch to Blend for is now incorporated into Visual Studio. Because they were actually looking at what developers were doing and seeing this kind of switching that was going on, so they kind of eliminated that for certain tasks. There's other things you are always going to need to do in Blend, such as rich animations.
Definitely.
Yeah, that sort of thing. So, but some of the simpler stuff that you used to have to go to Blend, you can now do in Visual Studio. You know, and as developers and as programmers, we probably kind of just start off worrying about how to make the program work. But the key message here is that user acceptance for an app, success for an app, is not just about it giving the information. That is important, but it needs to be pleasant to use. And so graphic design is such a key ingredient of modern smartphone apps. So you really need to have good graphic design expertise in your team. Now then, we've already seen these project templates in Visual Studio. So this is a good place to start. We're going to create ourselves a project. And each of them maps onto, each of these are alternative starting points. None of them are dead ends. You could start with any one of these templates and delete the code it's generated for you and change it completely. So you're not shutting any doors, apart from the obvious choice of are we going native or are we going XAML.
Absolutely.
But if you choose one of the XAML ones, so the XAML ones here, the examples of them, these are the main ones you're going to choose from. There's the basic single page app, which is the Windows Phone app. The Windows Phone data bound app is very interesting. It's a two-page app where you've got a list, and then you select an item, and it switches to the details page for the selected item. So, and it's got a basic model view model architecture in it, which is something I'm going to come back to in a while. So, good architecture demonstrated by that project template. There's the Pivot app, which is one of these multi-page scrollable displays, and the Panorama one, which I showed in the previous session. And you choose whichever one is appropriate for you. So there on the left, we've got the basic single page app, the output from it. Then the one in the middle is actually what you get when you create a project from the data bound one. And then on the right is the Panorama one, the one we saw in the first session. Now, so we've created our project. I'm going to obviously go into a demo in a moment, but let's just talk before we do that a little bit more about what it is we're working with, which is XAML. So what we're going to build is the Conto. So we're going to focus on one page in particular to start with as an exercise, so we can show you how you work with the tools. And we're going to build actually, I'm not going to start with the home page, the launch page, which is the list of recipes. I'm going to leave that until later in this session, just for my own purposes. It's kind of easier to start with this one. But also the message here is you can actually need to create each page in isolation anyway. So I'm going to focus on start with designing the recipe details page, which is a pivot. So you have the recipe on the picture and directions on the first pane, and then you scroll to the right and you get the ingredients list on the second pane. So this is the one we're going to build. And a pivot is structured like this. Obviously, it's all XAML. There's no hidden graphical stuff going on. There's no stuff hidden away in some file that you can't edit or something. It's all XAML. Everything you're seeing on the screen is represented by XAML, by this XML. And the basic structure here is you get the phone application page is the outer tags on a page, in a XAML page. And then inside that, you're always going to have a grid, which is named layout route. And then inside that, you have the content of the page. And there you can see on the slide, we've got a phone pivot tag, title of pivot application. And inside that, we've got pivot item 1 defined, and then pivot item 2. And each pivot item represents a screen full, a view of data. So this is where we actually work to create our UI for this particular page. So it's a multiple panes on a pivot. And each XAML element actually is a declaration of an object. This is what XAML is. It's just an XML way of saying, new me up a grid object. And inside it, create me a stack panel. And inside that, create a button or something like that.
So it's not like in VB in the 90s where we would just drag a grid on there, but we couldn't customize it ourselves. If we wanted a richer grid, we had to buy one from a third party. So what you're saying is with this XAML,
yeah,
you can put in things right into it, kind of like when you're building a web page, right?
Yep.
Customize its look and feel.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the controls you get in the toolbox in Visual Studio are sort of pre-formatted examples, if you like, or they're standardized versions of a button or a grid or a text box or text block. But each control is made up of XAML. You can actually customize how each of them looked right down to the finest detail. Now, so back to this XAML object. So each of the items on the screen, the application shown, is a graphical rendering of an object. So when we look at the way this is made up, this particular page, we've got the pivot title at the top, pivot item headers. So each pivot item, the header appears like that. The current focused one is bolded like that, and then the other ones are grayed out to give you the idea that there is more to be scrolled to on the left or the right. And then we've got an image and a text block, and then we've got all of the directions there and the preparation time and the number of minutes. So each of those elements has properties on it. And this is represented in the XAML, which shows the position on the screen, height and width of it. Everything is changeable. It's all represented in this XML. And these are used by the XAML display engine when the page is rendered up. And you can change any of those values in code, of course, in the background. So as the page lives, you know, things can change shape or move or disappear or fade in and out, that kind of stuff. And this is a whole family of tree. The family tree, the XAML class hierarchy, is actually quite complex. At the base of it, you've got this class called, this object called framework element, and everything inherits from that. So you can see we've got text blocks, and then we've got text boxes and buttons and hyperlink controls and all the kind of standard controls, text boxes, text blocks,
it's good to see
radio
this,
buttons and that sort of thing.
Good to see that this family tree actually forks.
Yes, yes.
It's always a good sign.
It's always a good sign.
Yes.
And that, of course, is a tiny representation of the whole thing, which is huge.
Don't be intimidated by that. If you're a beginner, you can always just go to the toolbox and drag and drop the controls on there and get started and build lots of great apps. Don't feel like you have to know the ins and outs of writing XAML by hand to build something.
And in fact, I'm going to show you using the tools and then make the connection between the two in just a moment. Yeah, okay, so dig a little deeper. Here's the elements and the XAML. So, just one moment. Yeah, so here we go. This is the pivot item one. So now we're going to look at one page, which has got inside our pivot item, we've got a grid, which has got a number of rows on it. We've got an image, and then we've got a thing called a scroll viewer, which is a way you can actually have some content that scrolls up and down within a bounded area, and then something called a stack panel. All these are layout controls that define what it looks like. So just to put a bit of definition onto that, here's our first row, which we've got a physical height of 240 pixels on it. And on that grid, well, actually, that image is on that row. It doesn't actually say grid.row anything on there, but that's because the default is grid.row equals 0, and this is row 0. So that image goes onto row 0. Then we've got our second row, which is in a rather fetching shade of purple.
It is fetching.
Yeah. And that one is height of star, which means basically just use up what's left after you've laid out all the other rows. And in that, we've got our scroll viewer. This is where the actual recipe directions is put on. So that fills up the space. And then we've got our third row is auto. So that is an automatically row that is given a height that is sized just enough to hold the content you've placed in it. And you'll see that that has got a stack panel, which has been put onto grid.row equals 2.
That's good to know. A lot of people might wonder, what is the difference between putting a star and auto?
Yeah, I'm going to come back to that in a bit more. Excellent. I'm going to show you now in a demo, so it makes more sense of that, so you can see what we're talking about. All right, so let's go to Visual Studio on the demo machine. So here we've got, I've created an empty project which has just got a main page on it. Let's just hide that so we can see a bit more. There's our design surface. Let's shrink that a little bit as well. Okay, so there's our design surface, and here's our XAML page for main page. Actually, the first thing I'm going to do is in Solution Explorer, I'm going to add a new page to this. So we can add a number of pages to our solution, add a new item. I'm going to add to this the a new pivot page, a Windows Phone pivot page. I'm going to call that the recipe detail page. Not page one, page. Add that to my project. So it's added that in. There we go, recipe detail page. And here now the design surface is coming up, and there's our XAML. Now what I'm going to do, I've done a little bit of pre-prep on this solution. So I've got in here, I've got some data classes. I've got a thing called a recipe data source, which is our data class. So I've got a little bit of content in. I've designed my data classes, and I'm now going to start building up the page that's going to show one of the recipes. So the first thing I want to do is change. So I can work directly on the designer for text things. So I can just click on this. He says, I can just click on this.
You can just click on it.
And then it could ignore me. That could be what it could do. So let's just bring up the properties thing. Actually, here's an example. Okay, so I want to change that to Contoso cookbook on the title. And then I've got two pivots, so I can work directly in the XAML. So we're going to have the recipe on there, and then in the second one, we're going to have ingredients. So that's our second one. As you can see, as I click in the particular in the XAML, it changes the focus on the design surface to the particular pane. So I can work on whichever pane. I'm going to work on the recipe pane. Now, another useful thing. So I'm going to drag some controls onto this and start doing some layout. What I'm going to do, there's a useful window over here called Document Outline, which is a good way of looking at all of the hierarchy of the page. So here we've got, this is our phone application page. It's got a layout route, which is this grid here, you can see on the right-hand side. Here's our pivot control, and we've got those two pivot items on it. So I'm going to expand the first pivot item and select the grid. It's highlighted in grey on the right there. So I'm going to work on this grid. Let's just zoom this in again so that we can actually see what we're doing. Right. So now I'm going to create some, I've selected the grid, I'm going to create some rows in that, and you can actually hover over the side and you can see this yellow line comes up, so I'm going to create myself a row there. I'm actually going to put the recipe name up the top there. And then I'm going to go down and leave space for the image, and then we're going to have a space then for the actual recipe directions, and then at the bottom we're going to need a little space to put the preparation time on there. So there we go. I'm going to now go onto the toolbox and start dragging some controls. And here's all the Windows Phone controls in the toolbox. So on the top, we need the recipe name. So what I want is a text block for that. This is for putting stuff directly onto the screen. So I can drag it in and drop it onto the UI. And I'm going to change the layout on that. Reset the layout, which removes. Well, before I do that, let me show you what it's done. It's stuck it up onto. If we look at the XAML on the right here, it's stuck it. There's that text block. It's put a margin on it. A margin is it means it's 41 pixels from the left, 30 pixels from the top, 0 from the right, and 0 from the bottom. So this is relative to its container. It has not stuck it into row 0. Oh no, that's in row 0 because it doesn't say grid.row anything. So This has got some space on it. I want to get rid of that space, so I'm going to reset the layout and remove all of those margins. It now just fills its container. I want to put an image onto the second row. So here's my image. Drop that down. And that always sticks it on there. So you can actually position things. If you just drag it up, you see the red line there on the bottom? That means we're focusing it into that row of the grid. So image now, if we scroll over to the right, in the XAML, you can see that that has stuck that into grid.row equals 1, so that's gone into grid.row equals 1. And I'm going to reset the layout on that, or again, remove all of the margins. It fills its container. This one here, this one I want to put the directions, and the directions is a big block of text, so we need to put a scroll viewer on that so that if it exceeds the space we've got, the user can still scroll up and down it. So here's a going to the toolbox, find our scroll viewer. There we go. Just check, yeah, we're into that particular thing. And inside the scroll viewer, I want to put a text box. Text block. So we can drop that onto the there. So we've got a text block inside our scroll viewer. And we can do the same thing of reset the layout, get rid of any of our margins and that sort of thing. So our text block is in there. So we're starting to get this together. Now on the bottom I need a label which just says prep time, mm-hmm. and then I actually need a number. So on there I want to put two controls and I want them side by side. So a really great control for doing that is the stack panel. So drop that down and drop it onto that. And let's just check, let's put it in the right place. Yeah, grid.row equals 0, 1, that in 3.
Right.
3, and I don't want it to span two rows. So there's our stack panel, and then inside our stack panel, I want to set a property on that. You can actually set stuff in the properties window as well. Here's our stack panel, and we can do, I want to change the, if I can find it, the orientation of that to horizontal. So, and inside our stack panel, then we're going to put a text block, drop it down onto our stack panel, and we can highlight that and change the text on it. So we're going to change that to prep time colon space and remove the reset the layout on that. So you can see it's starting to come together now. Actually, let's just move it into the stack panel. There we go. And the I think we're good. And then we need another text block as well, and drop that onto the same place. Right. So we've now got our rough UI. I'm just going to switch to. There's a few extra things I need to do as well on this. So I'm just going to switch to a completed one, just to save time because we're a little bit behind here. So you'll see that we've got our layout. Here's our recipe detail page. And the other thing I want to do now is, that's loading the designer. So we've got the completed design of this page. I want to actually show something on it when we run it. So the first thing I need to actually do is to make sure, there we go, this is what we were just working on. It doesn't look great at the moment, but you know, it's probably good enough. So in the we can go into the code view behind this, view the code behind our page, and there's a method called onNavigated2 which runs whenever you go to a new page in XAML application. Mm-hmm. So this is your code where you're going to set up the page to plug the data in and connect it to your UI. Now I've got some code I prepared earlier which is load some recipe data, and then we find a specific recipe with an ID of 2000, and then I'm going to set the controls, recipe name, which is the name of the text block where the recipe name goes, to the title from that recipe, set the image picture to look, this French 1600c.jpg, the directions goes into the text property of the directions text block, and the preparation time goes into the preparation time text block. And the other thing I want to do is in Solution Explorer, open up the properties thing because I want it to launch at that page. And this is the app manifest editor, which is a new feature in Windows Phone 8. So this, the manifest is a very important file where all the configuration for your app goes. It's an XML file. You used to have to edit this by as an XML document in right. 7. We've now got this GUI editor. You'll see that one of the things you can set is the navigation page. This is the launch page, the default launch page for your application. So we're good to go. So I can now launch this on the emulator. And here's our emulator come up. Loading it, and there we've got. So,
oh, looks lovely.
Well, it's not great. It's all right. It's a good first pass.
It's
a good first pass. Yes. We've got our title in there. We've got our image. We've got a scroll viewer.
I guess I was just focusing on the picture.
Well, it's a pretty picture.
It is.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So the content is there, but the styling, we need to do some more work on the styling. So if we just go back to the slides. So that's a pretty good first pass, and you saw an example of using the tools to lay out things in tables. Tables are your friend in this kind of thing, yeah.
Definitely.
But the styling is not particularly fantastic at the moment, so we've got a few things we need to fix. So how do we want to, if we want to change the size, for example, the way things are actually going to appear on the screen, then you could set colors and font sizes for elements directly in XAML. But actually, this is not a good idea. This is really not a good idea. So you could set the foreground to white and the font size to 24, and you might think that would work all right. So there's an example of actually the font size is horrendous on that. You can't read anything. But at least we've changed the way that the image is stretched into that, so it's been set to fit the thing, so that's pretty good. But if you set, we've got our UI there, we've set right. our text to white, for example, but what a lot of people forget is that Windows phones come with two themes. The user can choose from two themes, and they can choose from a number of different accent colors. So this is like the default color for tiles on the start screen. But the background can be light or dark.
Right.
So, of course, what happens is if you set your text to explicitly to be white and your user changes to the light theme, which means a white background, is your text disappears.
This ended really badly, didn't it?
It did end badly, yeah. Yes.
Wow.
So, as you can see, setting it to explicit colors is really not a good idea, unless right. you're creating an app that is a totally branded app that you've got a customer who you're creating an app for that has got a very strong branding coloring, you know, so there you might actually override this behavior and enforce a particular presentation for the app. So you need to set the background color explicitly rather than allow the user selected theme to have the effect.
You know what, Andy, this sounds a lot like the transition we made on the web. In the early 90s, we used to, or in the mid 90s, you know, we would put colors and font sizes on all HTML elements explicitly. And then we realized the pitfalls of that, like you're showing here, and then we came up with cascading style sheets because we realized there was overriding themes that we need to follow.
Yep.
It sounds a lot like this.
Yep, that's right. It is. And we have these default styles that are applied to the controls have are theme aware. This is the big deal.
Right.
Yeah, so these built-in styles are, you know, these you can apply to these controls and you will get a good-looking output. And it will be theme aware. So these phone text small style, phone text normal style, phone text subtle style, and these are just three examples. So there's a whole bunch of these you can choose from. And the good news is that whenever the user changes theme, then the foreground colors will change accordingly. So you will end up with stuff being legible all the time. Now this is one of those things that has a new feature in Windows Phone 8, is that now applying styles to controls is something you can now do in Visual Studio. So previously, you either had to just handcraft the XAML and know what it is you were going trying to achieve, or I used to switch into Blend for doing this kind of work. You still can switch into Blend, you can seamlessly switch between the two, but this is one of those tasks where that people who wear both hats as a designer and a developer, you want to change the style, you can now easily do it in Studio, which is cool. Alignment also is crucially important.
Definitely.
So we actually have some problems at the moment. The magic number in Windows Phone UI is 12 pixels, or multiples of 12. So your page needs to, and this is all described in the design guidelines, but your page should have a nice visually crisp line, 24 pixels from the left. And then when you're laying out controls on your screen, the gap between controls should be at least 12. And you should align on 12 pixel increments. There are a few cases where 6 might be acceptable, or 18. So, which kind of suggests that the magic number is 6 rather than 12, but hey, you know.
So not 42?
12, no, 12 is the one.
I had to throw that in there. I'm so sorry.
So, yeah, so at the moment, we've got a few little problems with our, this is our first pass, is that the, you know, the content is not aligned with the header, the page margin is not 24 all the way down, and actually the spacing between elements is pretty poor as well. Everything's kind of crammed up.
Yeah. And
it's not so good. So we can fix all this kind of thing. And this is what we're going to do. Now, there's help with this. So the alignment grid is crucially important. So with we've actually always had this alignment grid you could turn on at the bottom of the designer window, which is was always available in Blend, and you could turn that on in Visual Studio now as well. But actually, the best way of doing this is that whenever you create any new project in Visual Studio using the project templates, at the foot of the main page.xaml, if you go and look, there's some commented out XAML down there, which is this image source equals assets alignment grid.png. So that is made available. All you need to do is uncomment that, and it overlays on top of your UI this red grid, so you can see at a glance, both you know, from within the designer, how your stuff is lining up. And these are on 12 pixel boundaries.
It's like I'm in Visio.
Yeah,
kind of.
That's right.
Yeah.
So then, once you can see where your alignment is not good, you can actually start messing with margins and that sort of thing to move things around until everything lines up. So that's what you do. So if we can just switch to the demo machine. So here we are. We're back in Visual Studio. There we go. And there's this is where we left it. So not such a great example. I'm going to stop that. So let's just switch to the next iteration of our solution, which is the stars and alignment, where we've fixed some of these problems.
You know, it's completely appropriate that you jump ahead to different versions when dealing with recipes. Kind of like when you see those morning shows where they do the cooking.
Yes, here's one I prefer.
They're acting like they're showing them cooking it, and then they go, okay, now let's just jump ahead to the one that's finished, because we don't have time for all that.
We don't have time, and yeah. It would be tedious.
It would be tedious.
Yeah. So here you see, this is now our next iteration of that. You see the text block here, this guy?
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to just select that text block there. There we go. And so we can... I'm going to go to document outline, actually. It's a good way of working with these things. So there's our text block. And this is where you can edit the style. This is the new style. You can apply resource. And here are all the built-in styles. So you can see all the ones you can choose from. A whole bunch of these are all the built-in ones. You can create your own custom ones as well. But to be honest, why would you? But these ones work, and they are theme-aware. So there you can apply. You can choose the ones. I've already done it on this particular example. And the other thing here, we've got this device tab here. So if you want to check that that everything works, you can switch to the light theme in the designer and see straight away that everything is still legible.
That's a great feature.
Yeah, so there you go. So that's now looking much better. And I've done some stuff with margins and things, and everything is nicely aligned to the grid. So our application is looking better already. So running this up in the emulator... Here we go. Obviously, it's still, you'd want to remove that red grid before you shipped.
Right.
But now, yeah, we've got some nice spacing here. So, and a little bit of spacing below the image. The image is nicely fitting in there. And then we used the accent color on this particular emulator. It's red, so to call out that the title at the top. Maybe you could have made that a bit bigger, but you know, you can play with the design here and see and get it exactly how you like it. So, it's getting better. We're looking better. There's still something that's not fantastic at the moment, which is, at the moment you see we've just got text block in the designer. Oh, stop it running. Text block here. The image is not showing anything. Text block as the... So we've not got a great design experience. We're not seeing the sort of meaningful data in design mm-hmm. time. So if we go back to the slides, let's fix that one as the next sort of thing that you will want to do when you're creating apps is create good design time data. So that's the next topic in this particular thing. So design time data, this is pretty essential for designers, working in Blend particularly. I mean, we're working in Studio most of the time, but it's particularly if you're working in Blend, you've got a designer's hat on it. You need to see what stuff looks like, so you need to have some good design time data into that. Now, this is something where we need to go into Expression Blend. You can't do this. There's no tooling in Visual Studio to help you create this. But there's good tooling in Blend to allow you to generate, automatically generate some sample data. So the easiest way to do this, and the way I like to do this, is design. You're probably on your initial design, you'll have designed your data objects. Right. So I've already got a class in this solution that represents a recipe. And we can use that as the source for this create sample data from class feature and generate some real data in Blend that we can use at design time, which is a really cool thing. You can then customize the automatically generated data that it has created, and we're going to look at this in a minute. You can actually even edit. What it does, it spits it out into an XML file, which you can manually edit if you like, but most of the time, you're just going to work with the tooling, and you'll end up with good design time data. So if we go back to Visual Studio, and I'm just going to show you actually the integration. Design time data. I'll go to the begin one. I need to keep the pace up so that we try and keep to time. But we're in Visual Studio at the moment. So here we are, the recipe detail page. This is what we've been working on. Now, maybe now I want to actually work in Blend. And let's fix this problem and create ourselves some design time data. So what I'm going to do is right-click on here. And now we can say open in Blend. And it's going to start up the other tool. This is Expression Blend. Yeah. So here's Expression Blend starting up. So this is the designer's tool. It's working on exactly the same project files. Here we go. Here's the Blend UI. Now, first time you see this, you may have been forgiven for thinking that you had accidentally started Flight Simulator or something. But this
That'd
is
be fun.
So here we go. Here's the design surface. Looks kind of similar, but here's our. We've got actually the alignment grid is you know on by default in Blend. So this is very much the designers. This is similar to that document outline pane that we were looking at in Visual Studio.
Absolutely.
On the left. And over here we've got our data tag. And actually what we're going to do is generate ourselves some design time data. So in Blend I'm going to go to create sample data from class. So there's three options. You can import it from an XML file, create it from a class. I'm going to drill down into my project, into the data, and go and find a recipe data item. This is the object that represents a recipe. And we're going to click the OK. And now, actually, what we've got is some design time data, which I can start. I can actually drag and drop some things. So the title, for example, let's drag that and drop that onto there. Oh, it changes some Latin words.
It's always Latin, isn't it?
It is always Latin. And directions, I can drop that and drop that onto this guy. There you go, and some more Latin words, and obviously the prep time is that int32, that goes on there, so actually that's looking all right. Now this is getting better, but it's still not perfect, so this is that title, for example. You can go in here and you can edit the thing, so the default format is this thing called lorem ipsum. Do you know what lorem ipsum is?
I've seen it everywhere, I don't really know what it means.
It's kind of interesting. So back in the Middle Ages,
yes,
when the very first printing presses were being created, they used to have the very first mechanized printing presses. They need to have some way of setting the machine up for a print run. And they used to have a standard text that they would use for that. And this was always this Latin that began lorem ipsum est. So, and it's become a stalwart of the publishing industry, and you still see it
I'm
today.
I'm glad we brought it to today.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm glad. No, that's good. I don't like seeing things like that die off.
Thank you, Rob. So you can change.
I was serious.
Yeah. So you don't need to use lorem ipsum. You could choose to use a name, for example. You know, so it's actually a person's name, or you could choose to use a company name or whatever. So this sort of thing. And the ingredients, for example, go away. This guy. So I've got a floating box here. Oh my gosh. So this is probably a good point at which to move to the completed one.
You should probably move to it. You know, yeah. I'm starting to wonder if we actually compiled you in the cloud or not. I think you're still JIT, yeah. And I think we've done some code pitching.
Yes, indeed, right. So let me just go and find the completed one. So I've still got this weird phantom floating box on it. But anyway, you can see now we've got some nice, you know, the image in there and more meaningful text, and it's all getting to be a much better design experience. Sorry about this guy. And it works in Visual Studio. You can see Visual Studio saying, hey, somebody's been messing with my files, which of course is true because they're the same files, so you can reload everything. And the changes we've made will appear in Visual Studio. Except they won't because I didn't save the changes too much. By the way, all of this sample code, we're going to make this available to you. We're going to zip it all up and make all of these samples available for you to
you know, Andy, to look at. This great blend tool, is this available for if I'm building Windows 8 apps as well?
It most certainly is.
Outstanding.
Yes.
Good. So it's good to know.
This is consistent across the whole of the product. So yeah.
Oh, that's great to know.
Yeah. So now in this iteration, now we've improved massively the design time experience, and the design time data when the designer loads is going to turn up in Visual Studio just the same as it does in Blend. So that's pretty useful when it comes up.
Yes.
Come in on. A moment when it comes up.
Wait for it.
It's going to be there. It's going to be there.
Reaching back to the Latin.
There we go. So, all right. Yeah. Thank you.
Is that tiramisu?
It is. It is.
Excellent.
Yeah. No, it's aliquam masenus present, apparently.
Whoa. Oh. Wow, that changes everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
Slides, please.
Here we go. Let's do the slides.
Yeah, so that was design time data. Right, now, data binding. So in the you know, if you remember, cast your mind back to the on-navigated to code, yeah. And I said, oh, I'm just going to put some code in here to show one of these recipes. And we were hard coding the data was we had lines of code in there to actually update the text property of controls. You can do that. You could write your app to every UI control, like text box one. You can set its text property to a string, such as hello world or whatever. But just think of anything that's even moderately complex. If you have all the code to set every property on all your UI controls in your code behind file, this is rapidly going to become unwieldy, unmaintainable. This is not the way to go. So you need to use a technique called data binding, which is a way of linking your UI class in your application to your application data in a very nice and easy, transparent way. And the way it works is this. Here we've got an example of a text block, which has got a name. We're giving it a name of directions text block. And so you could have in your code, you could have directions text block dot text equals take 1 liter of milk and three blocks of chocolate, et cetera, you know. So you could actually set the text. But instead, we've got this thing called a binding statement, which is pointing at something called directions. Now, directions here is the property of that recipe data item.
Oh.
So we're giving it the name of a property in our underlying data object. And then, so that's what that's a binding statement. And then somewhere else on the page, or indeed you could do it on this element, but typically you do it on the page, you set something called a data context. And the data context says, okay, for any binding statement on any element in this page, I want you to resolve the binding statements against this particular object. So you'll set your data context to the instance of a recipe data source. And then once you've done that, automagically, this text block will go and pull the directions property, the value of the directions property of that recipe out of there and display it on the screen.
That's like magic.
It's like magic. There are three modes for this. There's a one-way mode, one-time, and two-way. So one-time means that when the page is rendered, any binding statements are resolved against the underlying data context just the one time and displays it on the screen. And thereafter, if you change the underlying data object, anything changes it in code, it's not reflected in the UI.
Right.
One way, loads the page up, gets the values from the underlying data object, but then if you've got some code that's running in the background, maybe going off to a web service, updating the properties of your underlying data object, the UI will keep in sync with that. So every time your code changes a property on your data object, the UI will update in sync with that.
Okay, that's good.
Two-way is the next step up from that. Does everything one way does, but it's also, this is for controls where the user can interact with. So if they've got a text box where they can type text into it, or radio buttons where they can select a radio button or this sort of thing, then the change goes the other way as well. So you can, the user types something into the text control. If it's data bound to some property on the underlying data object, the data object will get updated with that
change. So the user doesn't have to write code to save that data to the model, to
exactly.
the object? Oh,
exactly.
That's great.
So it all happens automagically.
That's
you end
great.
Up with much cleaner code. It's much better structured and much more maintainable.
I think we've come a long way from the data control. Yeah. In VB3, you drop it on there, do DAO to bind to access. This is great stuff.
It is. It is. It's cool. Now, the magic that makes this work is quite simple. Actually, it's not magic. Is that we have on our data object, and they're typically called view models. So here we've got an example of an item view model. They need to implement an interface called iNotifyPropertyChanged. And this interface, all that it requires is that this object has a public event called PropertyChanged. And it has to fire that event anytime a property on that object gets updated.
Right.
Now, it's the actual XAML runtime engine is what subscribes to those events. So it gets notified anytime the data object gets a property changed. So it will then look at its binding statements and update the relevant controls. So the controls UI, the controls are bound to the view model and will get updated through this, through being notified through this property. Now, there's a nice enhancement in Windows Phone 8. So this is the old way of doing it. So you look at there's a property called ID, a string, which has a getter on it, which simply returns the value of that property. The setter says, okay, if the value you're setting me to is changed, then we update the backing field, and then we fire this property changed event through calling that private method called notify property changed. Now, the problem with that is that you'll see when we call notify property changed, we have to pass the string.
Yes, you do.
Value of that property name. Now, as we all know, we all learned in kindergarten, or maybe we didn't. We learned very early on that magic strings, that's an example of a magic string, are bad news in object-oriented code.
I totally remember that from kindergarten.
I learned magic it very early on.
Or sharing was another thing.
Yes.
I didn't learn to share, actually. All right, anyway.
Yeah. So that code has a problem in that you could change the name. You can use the nice refactoring tools in Visual Studio and change that ID to ident. But then unless you remembered to go in and change ID string in notify property changed, that call to notify property changed, unless you remember to go in and change that to ident as well, then your data binding will all break down.
It'll break.
So here's the new way in Windows Phone 8, which is a much better way of doing it. And it's this thing called a caller member name attribute. Now, this looks quite complicated, but this is just a pattern you'll reproduce over and over. So from the public event property changed event handler property changed down, that's kind of boilerplate code you'll stick into every single one of your view models. Or more typically, you'll put it into a view model base class that you'll inherit your view models from, so you get that behavior. And then you just code up all your properties the same the way you see ID there. So instead of doing notify property changed with a hard-coded string of ID, you call this.setProperty, brackets, ref, this.underscore, then the name of the backing field, value. That's what you do. You just do that.
Okay.
And then it makes the call, and it makes the call out to the setProperty method, which you can see in the middle there. And that caller member name attribute automatically knows who's calling it and sets the right real string name. So this is a way of using a clever thing. And you'll see this in .NET Framework 4.5 and in Windows Store apps and that kind of thing. So it's a good innovation because it does remove one of those potential causes of error when you start refactoring your data classes. Right, so let's look at the slides again. Oh, yeah, just mention a binding to lists. There we've got ListBox has a similar version of data context, which is called an item source.
Instead of
data context points as a single object, item source has to point at a collection of objects. That's the only difference, really. And here's an example of an observable collection.
Not to be confused with a generic list.
Not indeed, yes. Now, all of this data binding stuff is the underpinnings of an important architectural model called MVVM, which stands for Model View View Model. This architectural pattern employs data binding as the heart of making this work. And it's about strict separation of concerns, which is a good object-oriented thing. It's all about making sure your views, which are your XAML pages, don't have any logic in them, and they just use data binding. All they are about is presenting the UI to your user. Their only concern in life, their concern is to show stuff to the user, accept their input, and then immediately to pass it off to the view model for processing. So they don't have you don't put any logic in your views. They're just about presentation layer. The logic of your application goes in your view model classes or associated classes that they control. And the linking between your view and your view model is through data binding. Underneath that, the model bit is really just your persistent data, which is it's a kind of a flexible concept. It could be in a database, a local database, could be in a XML file. It could be in the cloud. It could be in a data service, so it's sure. your data. But it's the model is the data. View model is the logic and the surface that the views data bind against. That's kind of a simplification of what it's all about. So there we go. I haven't got time to go into any more detail on MVVM, but it's an important model, and we will come back to that tomorrow when we talk about Windows Phone 8 and Windows 8 cross-platform development.
Absolutely. It jumps right out at you. That's clearly the way to help get your apps working cross-platform.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so I'm just going to do one more demo, and then we're going to wrap on this session. So if we go back to here, let's go and open. Go away. Thank you. The final one where we've got to, where we have laid out now in this version. Our UI now uses data binding, so let's have a look at how that makes a change to our recipe detail page that we've been looking at. I'm going to have a look at the code first. Here's our code file. So you remember on Navigator 2, it had all this stuff in it that's now commented out, all this horrible stuff that's setting text properties of controls. That all goes. We're still just pulling out, you know, a random, well, the recipe with that's got an ID of 2000. But then look, all we do is set the data context on the page to that recipe data item. So item is an instance of a recipe data item object.
That was easy.
Yeah, so that now makes our code nice and clean. And in the designer, here's our XAML. Looks the same, of course. But in the actual XAML itself, if we dig down into this, you'll see that here we've got a the text block, recipe name. Let's have a look at that one. The text property is now binding to the title property. And that's actually what I did. When I dragged title in the data binding, in the design time data onto that control, that set up a binding statement, in fact. The image there, this recipe image, that has its source data bound to the background image property of the underlying object. And this text block, which is the directions, this guy here, mm-hmm. that's data bound to the directions property.
Outstanding.
Yeah. And what this sample also does something else with our main page. So we've actually added in this iteration the list. Here's a list. And you'll see that we have in lists, we have something called a data template, which is what we use for laying out each and every item on a list. And that also uses data binding. So here we've got an image, we've got a bit of text, and then we've got some smaller text. And what that is, here's our image, and that's data bound to background image property on some object. And we've got the text block, which is binded to something called title. So what this is doing, a listing of regions, and this one is binded to the description. And the logic behind this, the list is set to, we're already in the designer, view code. Here we are in our on Navigator 2. We load our recipes, and when it's loaded, we set the data context of our list groups, which is our long list selector, to that recipes collection. App.recipes is our collection of objects, which is a collection of recipes. So we're coming together now. We're making little iterative changes. We've now got a main page, which looks like this. Isn't that beautiful? It scrolls up and down. Look.
Wow.
And you get this automatic nice bouncy behavior for free. And then you can select an item and actually nothing happens, because that is the first topic on the next session, which is going to come up after a little 10-minute break.
Excellent. A nice little cliffhanger.
Yeah.
It's going to keep you
come
reading.
Come back. Join
the
us next week when we find out what happens to the recipe, the regions list box.
Exactly.
All right.